In today's Nutrition and Life episode, I speak with coach and podcaster Zach Ritchie. Zach and I speak about approaches to tackle disordered eating patterns and how we can make sure we are progressively overloading in our training. I'm excited for you to listen to my conversation with Zach, and please, if you enjoy the show, subscribe and give us a rating or take a screenshot and share the episode on your social media. Thank you so much. Now on to my conversation with Zach. Hello and welcome back to the Nutrition and Life podcast. My name is Lisa, I'm your host, and today I have the pleasure of speaking with coach and podcaster Zach Ritchie from The Educated Dieter Coach. Welcome to the show, Zach.
Hey, thank you so much, Lisa, for having me.
It's my absolute pleasure. I'm really excited to talk about all things coaching, nutrition, training, and so on. But first of all, I'd love to hear a little bit about you, how you got into the industry of coaching.
Definitely, yeah. And so found my passion for nutrition and health just based upon personal reasons. So as far as growing up a little bit heavier, I realized that, you know, I became very interested in what I could do to personally help me. And so completely at a young age, so early high school, transformed my life with nutrition and training. Got extremely into it. And so I saw my life improve significantly in multiple different ways, became, you know, very successful in regards to athletics, definitely became very passionate with all that. Following that, when high school ended, experienced some health issues myself in regards to I was diagnosed with a pituitary tumor and realized I wasn't making any of my own endogenous hormones. That led me down the road of really becoming obsessed and passionate about being able to optimize hormone function, became very passionate in regards to the endocrinology side of things. And decided to go to school for dietetics. So got my undergrad in nutrition and dietetics, worked many years in a human performance lab while also doing personal training on the side. Then following that, went on to grad school for nutrition as well as public health. During that time, did many internships and eating disorder clinics, bariatric centers, working with sports dietitians as well. So trying to get as much experience as I could. That was up north before I moved down to Florida. That is when I started working in HRT clinics. So I managed many HRT clinics from a nutritional standpoint. That did that for many years before I went all in with William Grazione, which I know you've had on the podcast before. So it's been a great mentor to me, pretty well-renowned coach, pretty well-known in the industry. He kind of took me under his wing, and I learned even more in regards to this space, you know, helping people optimize hormone function, improve body composition, overcome any illnesses and ailments they're dealing with from a functional medicine standpoint. I've been doing that for, I think I've been with Will a little over 5 years now. On the side, I also do nutrition education in the form of webinars and seminars here in the state of Florida, just to help practitioners maintain their credentials, CU hours by attending, you know, courses and that we host. So.
Wonderful. It's such an interesting journey. And I think I've said this before, but I think the best coaches are always those or born out of the people that have had their own struggles and have a personal interest in helping people that have the same struggles. So I'm very, very interested to hear. And yeah, when Will was on, we kind of focused more on the hormonal side of things. And of course, I definitely want to touch on hormones as well. But what I'm really interested in talking about today would be also your experience with disordered eating patterns. And I know, like most people listening here, they don't really have any disordered eating, so to speak, but certainly certain at times perhaps disordered eating patterns. So nothing clinically diagnosed, or you know, maybe not in the side of like anorexia or binge eating or something like that, but You might have an episode where you're like, I totally felt out of control. I didn't feel like I could, like, I felt like my body was taking over for some reason. So, talk to me about the clients that you work with, and when you see patterns like that, like, how do you go about it?
Definitely. And so, yeah, work with a lot of clients experiencing disordered eating behaviors, whether, like you said, it is from a clinical standpoint, being diagnosed with an actual eating disorder, or just, something that we can maybe even just self-diagnose just based upon patterns that we see, as far as, any sort of OCD or, demonization of specific food groups, or just a overabundance of output. So someone who's just exercising so much and, not getting the energy input to make up for that. So yeah, definitely something that we're passionate as far as working with those clients. It definitely takes a little bit more of a hands-on approach working with those clients, as far as guidance and usually daily, almost daily check-ins, and also really celebrating the small wins. And so in those standpoints, it's usually, let's say, from someone who's chronically under eating, so not someone who's so much dealing with severe binging or something, but those can be as easy as, hey, I'm giving you specific goals that I want you to surpass from a food standpoint, or and a lot of times your only job as the coach in that regard is trying to put the brakes on the client, and so really celebrating them not overdoing it or torturing themselves. And so a lot of these people, even though they may be even experiencing some of these disordered eating behaviors, have body composition based goals. And so with that being the case, we're trying to encourage, a lot of times we'll focus on more of a reverse diet or a health phase is what we'll call it. Any way in which we can have them focus on more performance-based goals while we're focusing on their body composition, is usually something that's a little bit more gratifying, just because that isn't something as far as performance-based goals are usually a little bit more instantly gratifying as compared to body composition-based goals. And a lot of times these are type A individuals who need that. And so usually most of the times you see or have worked, I'm sure I've worked with people that have eating disorders or disordered eating behaviors, they're very type A. They're some of the hardest working people I know usually, and they have high standards for themselves. And so that's
All
usually where they
about
work.
control, isn't it?
Exactly. And so I also had personal experience with that, experiencing some disordered eating behaviors myself in my younger years, before I became a little bit more educated in the field of nutrition, but also having family members, a sister who was hospitalized for anorexia. And so that right there definitely also is what pushed me into the field of nutrition, is just having the experience and seeing what, wow, nutritional strategies can do to improve someone else's life. And very much same situation, someone who was very self-motivated and a determined individual, our valedictorian throughout high school, and and went on and did great things after she conquered her conquered. I mean, I guess it's going to be a lifelong struggle, but has been able to handle it since then. So, but yeah.
I'm on that point. I mean, that's only one side of the coin. I'm excited to get into the other side, but Zach, I'm interested to hear from your experience and from what you learned. How do we even get to the bottom of where that comes from? Because I'm a big believer that once we understand why we are a certain way or why we think a certain way, it helps us kind of tackle that better. Like, if I understand this comes from my upbringing in that this and that
Yeah.
way or whatever. So how do we get to that point?
Yeah. And so it's usually, and so what I've typically seen is whether, in extreme cases, it's a lot of times trauma induced, as far as, full on eating disorders. But it can also just be something as far as this is an aspect of my life that I can control. And so it's, if let's say everything else in life right now you feel as though out of control or a little bit chaotic, that you can determine what goes in your body. And so it is a control aspect. And hey, I have the And it can't just be someone who's extremely disciplined. I have the discipline to be able to torture myself, you know, as far as I want to lose weight, I want this body, so therefore I'm going to deprive myself. And so it's dieting harder rather than smarter. And big reason, I mean, you know, a lot goes into it, but as far as that's kind of why we call ourselves the educated dieter, is because, you know, anyone can lose weight. But it's a matter of a lot of times improving health markers and improving body composition. And improving body composition doesn't just mean losing weight. And so these individuals are usually pretty hardworking and can do that. And it usually is a control aspect, is, hey, I get to control this. I get to control, you know, how much activity I do each day and how much food I consume. And so, and a lot of times that can send you down a rabbit hole that's really hard to come out of. So,
Well, you
get to
mentioned
that.
something really wonderful in regards to your sister and how we can perhaps turn that into something positive if we channel that discipline, if we channel that dedication into something that is more health conducive, like a degree or like I mean, like you said, there's nothing wrong with setting a great goal for your physical, like for a competition or something like that. As long as you make sure you're supporting your body in the same way, and as long as you can perhaps from time to time also loosen up the reins when it's called for.
Yeah, we see a lot of that even when we do coach competitors is obviously they love their show-ready physique, but letting them understand that this isn't sustainable. And usually lab work can be the thing to really relay that message, is saying, hey, look how, you know, majority of things here aren't in a great place. And that's just because, you know, as awesome as bodybuilding is, no one ever said it was a healthy sport. We have to go to the extremes in that regard, you know, for people who are competitors. But it isn't something that's sustainable. And so there is a time and a place for that, for those extremes. But the majority of the year in that regard, talking about physique-based athletes, majority of the year should be something that's a little bit more sustainable, somewhere where you're making progress. And that's not going to be done in an extreme caloric deficit.
Really, really good point. And that person, the type A person, which I will say I count myself towards that person as well. We most of us love data, and so kind of having that little stick thing with the blood work and be like, hey, okay, let's measure that again in 3 months' time. That can be a really good incentive.
Exactly.
But yeah, I want to shift also to the other side of the spectrum. Let's say like that person that might be listening who's more struggling with staying in control. So for example, they might be saying like in the morning, I'm motivated, I can do this, I'm in control, I've got my plan. And then their evening time hits and it's like all going out the window and the body takes over. And afterwards they feel guilty. They feel like they've, way overdone it and just feel gross about
Exactly.
themselves. So like,
Yeah, it's so common.
how do we tackle that?
Yeah, and so that right there, as far as typically those cravings occur in the evening because a lot of people are looking for a dopamine hit, or you know, to increase serotonin prior to you know, going to bed. And so usually it helps you sleep a little bit more when you have something in your sleep a little bit better when you have something in your stomach. And like you said, we only have so much willpower, and if you know we completely exhaust it throughout the day, there is going to come a time or place in which, like maybe some of those you know, in extremes binge episodes can happen, or just you know, for you know, the majority of people just falling off the plan. And so in that regard, really like to have a little bit more structured plan. So rather than, you know, in that regard, going with just a macros-based approach, you could with someone like that go with something a little bit more structured, just to provide them some you know, some boundaries, whether that's, hey, it doesn't have to be completely structured, give them options, different substitutions. But as far as I would have meal timing a little bit more spaced out, so that they're not experiencing that extreme hunger at any point during the day, and also not exhausting all of their resources as far as macros, too early within the day. Also, at that point, I usually like to use high volume foods. So, foods that aren't extremely calorically dense, but are still filling space. And so, Usually, let's say, except for when we have to go into the extremes for, let's say, a contest prep or something, I usually don't even like my clients at that point to track things such as green veggies or cruciferous vegetables, things like that. Using that more as just kind of bulk filler, and so that's usually something I like to do in regards to keeping a client from doing that, and then finding ways to make your food a little bit more hyper palatable without being extremely calorically dense. And so that's just going to be low calorie seasonings and sauces and things like that, something that makes them enjoy their meal. And there's all sorts of different tricks. And, we're lucky nowadays to have a lot of tools that have developed over the years. I, have a ton of clients who are using like those, homemade ice cream makers and things like that, that, are turning protein shakes into that nice little sweet treat to have before bed. All sorts of different little things like that. You can pretty much go on social media and find all sorts of different dieting hacks in that regard, things that are voluminous, but not extremely calorically dense. And so that's the way in
Yeah,
which
those are some really great tips. And I think for a lot of people, it comes down to also just wanting to quote unquote, having to something to do at that time of the day, because you're like sitting on the couch and you're like, okay, I don't want to play with my phone. Because nowadays we have such a hard time just doing one thing. Like, it's nearly
100%.
impossible to just watch Netflix or whatever. You either want to be on the phone at the same time, or you want to eat something at the same time, or you have a conversation with someone at the same time. So I think for a lot of people, it comes down to just keeping busy as well. And if we can,
100%.
well, bring awareness to that, number one, and number two, shifting to other things like, hey, do your nails or fold the laundry
Exactly.
or
Time
like.
to find a new hobby once you start dieting. It's a great way to do it, and ways in which to eliminate stress. And so any way we can lower stress. And so a lot of times whenever someone does get into a habit of, let's say, falling off the plan or binging, it's usually due to another thing going on in life. So let's say work is really stressful. Relationship right now is very stressful. Food's an easy coping me mechanism. It's easy to turn to. So just finding a substitution for that, like you said, is an excellent way to try to mitigate some of these things that cause us to fall off.
Yeah, also what you I really like what you said earlier to like already pre-plan if you're that person who likes to have some kind of quote unquote snack or dessert after dinner, like make sure you plan that
Yeah,
in.
track that first.
Yeah, and not just say like, oh no, I'm gonna stop eating at 5 p.m. because that's like ideal scenario. No, I know I'm the person. I do want to have a little bit of dark chocolate or like a popcorn or something that's super
Exactly.
that would be another good trick
Yeah,
and
make that a staple in your meal plan. And all that comes down to communication. And so let's say if these people are working with a coach, which someone in that circumstance I would definitely recommend, just because it's less thought for you. As much as a person like that feels as though they can do it themselves, a lot of times it becomes paralysis by overanalysis. And having someone else to hold you accountable is excellent. And so that's definitely what I would encourage. But like you said, I feel as though kind of factoring those things in is in communicating it with your coach as far as, hey, I love having a snack in the evening. Is there any way that we can keep that? Awesome. Yeah, of course. If your coach can't fit something in, then might be time to look for a new coach. But if
Really
it's
good
something
point.
like that, then yeah, I feel as though anyone should be able to keep it in. And so communication is always number one. That's definitely what we value over anything.
Awesome. Yeah, I love it. And when it comes to where that aspect stems more from, like the person that kind of like tends to lose control more often, would that then be the opposite end of the spectrum where we can say it could ha have come from maybe too much of a rigid structure when they were?
100.
When they grew up, or a very strict parent who's like, no, you can't have this. So now it's kind of turned into the other side. Is that?
100%. It's very individualized. And so if you're someone who obviously needs to kind of let go of the wheel a little bit, give your coach a little bit more of the ability to help you in those scenarios, I'd feel as though that's definitely necessary. Is trying your best to get those people who very much want to maintain that control, give them some variety, but also some guidance,
Mm-hmm. And just going back to the point of the blood work, because I mean, of
Yeah.
course, it's helpful for anyone, not just the person who's under eating or so. So when someone wants to get blood work done, number one, what do you like them to get tested for? Because I mean, there are so many different tests, and what are the main markers that you're interested in with most of your clients?
Yeah, as far as just like from a generalized standpoint, we usually go with a pretty all-encompassing panel, liking obviously the normal things, CBC, CNP, things like that. But then things such as a pretty in-depth hormonal panel, as well as thyroid, and then looking closer at some, of the stress markers, things like that. And so that's a good place to start. If someone comes to us specifically and we know that there's more GI issues going on, then at that point, we'll definitely get a little bit more in depth in regards to maybe we'll do food sensitivity or something like that. Or if we know that a lot of it is stress induced, or the hormonal panel is, we're not. We're seeing that in the first panel that we did, some of the stress markers elevated and things like that. Kind of want to know where that's coming from. So then at that point, if we can encourage a Dutch test, we'll do that. But obviously, we want to do what we can with as little as we can, a lot of times just to eliminate costs for people. Because some of those, the deeper you get into some of the labs, obviously, the pricier it gets. But usually, we can do a lot. I would say 99% of people, we can probably get away with doing a pretty all-inclusive, just blood panel.
Okay, awesome. And then earlier you said that often we tend to want to eat in the evening, also to
Yeah.
the release with serotonin and just relaxation and sleep in general. That brings me to the question of like supplements. Are there any specific supplements that you tend to recommend for people that are either highly stressed, like that type A person that has a hard time coming down, or just in general, someone who has sleep issues maybe?
Yeah, 100%. I'd say first would be magnesium is going to be number one. Maybe second to like a vitamin D, just because I can't tell you the last time I saw a lab panel that someone had adequate vitamin D levels without actually supplementing with it. So I think that that's always a good place to start with, just because it's going to help really with everything in regards to a hormonal standpoint. It's usually seen more as a hormonal transport. So kind of taking the hormones from their secretion site to their receptor site. So a lot of times, something like that, really with everyone, especially after looking at labs. Magnesium's great. You can use ashwagandha if people do well with that. That's an excellent one. I'd say magnesium's usually the first one we start with when it comes to trying to help someone relax in the evening. And then maybe going into more of a, exogenous melatonin after maybe we exhausted some of our ways to increase natural melatonin. So with obviously some, darker shade curtains, maybe less screen time, 45 minutes to an hour before you go to bed, and finding different ways to relax and stimulate their natural melatonin cycle. But those are some things that I would say some easy places to start. Obviously, we'll go more advanced as we need to, but I usually don't like to throw the entire toolbox at everyone from the start, just so they're not taking a bucket of pills every single day.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to go about it. We always want to start with the minimal effective dose.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, but I come across a lot of people that say, I don't necessarily have issues falling asleep, but I wake up at like 3, 4 o'clock and I cannot go back to sleep. Hey, do you see that within your clients
Oh,
also?
100%. And a lot of times that's when I like to do more of a Dutch test. And so there's obviously, maybe a spike in cortisol in the middle of the night. And maybe they're waking up and their cortisol is extremely low and it should be, around the opposite. So a lot of times that's when, okay, maybe we need to focus a little bit more on stress hormones and trying to figure that out. So that's extremely common. So.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, so my clients are not the only ones battling with that.
Yeah.
I want to shift gears a little bit, Zach, because I know you're also big in the training space, and so I want to talk about progressive overload or training intensity and what your general recommendations are there, how we can make sure we are progressively overloading and what that actually means.
Awesome. And so, yeah, I'm very passionate about training. I myself am involved in bodybuilding. And so, whether it's someone coming to us for physique-based goals, I usually go that route in regards to training for hypertrophy. If someone's coming to us more performance-based, then obviously we'll cater it towards that. But in regards to body composition-based movements, always in the always a proponent of progressive overload, whatever way that can come. Whether that's, hey, each week, especially at the beginning, a lot of times we can get away with each week increasing load in some capacity. And then we get to a point, especially during when clients start to stall, to where any form of progressive overload, we're going to see increase in. So as far as when you advance with a new stimulus, the body has to adapt to that new stimulus, and that's progressive overload in itself. And that adaptation occurs via lean muscle tissue. So trying to progress in one way or another, whether that's reps. So, hey, this week I did the same weight as last week, but I got one or two more reps. Awesome. That's progression. Or maybe I slowed down the tempo, focused, even heavier, more heavily on the contraction, and the, let's say the, different portion of the movement. So the concentric, maybe I slowed that down a little bit. So something like that. And then once we get to the, once we maybe exhaust some of those things, then it's throwing in intensity techniques is usually what I like to do. So maybe some supersets, drop sets, rest pauses, things like that. Any way in which we can increase the progression. So.
Yeah, I think the simple ways to progressively overload, let's say like increase in weight, increase in reps and sets and so on, that works really well for the novice to intermediate lifter. I think once we deal with like advanced or really advanced people, that's kind of where we have to look more into okay, first of all, are we actually periodizing properly and taking
100%, yeah.
like deloads, whether that's auto-regulated or not,
Yeah.
and then also throwing in some tempo work or other kind of like cluster sets or drop sets,
Yeah,
whatever.
different intensity techniques for
Because
sure.
of course, after a while, we can't always just keep adding weight, unfortunately,
Yeah, a
or
lot of times
yeah.
we'll run into injury or risk of injury at that point. And so, yeah, and in those times, it does usually require maybe a deload week or, different ways in which we can, let's say, hopefully go back to the training program and break through a plateau. And so there's definitely different ways to do that with through periodization. So, yeah, definitely agree with that.
And then another thing, of course, really important when it comes to training in general is like intensity. What are your recommendations when it comes to proximity to failure?
Yeah.
How close should we be training to failure, really?
Yeah, and I would say for the I'd say for the majority of people, I like to take at least one set to failure or as close as we can to it. And so even if you can get to a point to where you're doing an assisted reps, awesome. And so that's personally how I like to train, like to have a lot of my clients train. And so whether that's we're going to do a few warm-up sets, do a and then do an actual training set to kind of determine what our top set's going to be for the day, and then something that's all out, and then maybe back down to a maybe a back off set after that. So just so we can get a higher rep range, something like that. So I do like to take, usually one exercise, at least one set to failure on each exercise. Definitely it's definitely different from time to time as we get more into like accessory movements. There's usually for like my compound movements, as we get more into accessory movements, a lot of times can get away with more of like a little bit more higher rep schemes, just to focus a little bit more on the contraction. That's kind of how I like to go about it. And so a lot of people get really caught up on rep ranges as well. I know that a lot of the research shows from a hypertrophy standpoint, somewhere between that like 6 to 12 rep range is very highly effective. Personally, I like my clients to progress in all rep ranges. So I don't see a reason why you can't, oh, hey, we're going to do some really heavy weight and we're staying within that, 6 to 8 rep range, awesome. But then, hey, maybe that ne maybe next week we're going to do this same exercise, but we're going to do 15 to 20 reps, rep scheme. And so why not progress in all those? And if you're tracking those, let's say if you're someone who's, who loves to, track everything in your book, awesome, go for it. And so then look and see, hey, what did I do last time I did the higher rep range, and then try to top that. So try to beat that in some way, some regard.
Yeah, I would say that I personally enjoy or I personally practice a rather also in the sense of the same style when it comes to proximity to failure, like especially those accessory lifts, like lateral raise or leg extension, whatever. You know, if people don't push that to failure, then I often think like they are probably underestimating how far away from failure. Like if they think they're too away from failure, there's probably another five in the tank somewhere. So I would always also try to push those lifts a little bit closer to failure. But for example, I can't remember the last time I've taken a back squat to failure just because I've also had some sciatic nerve issues and stuff. So
Exactly. You got to work around injuries for sure. And so,
yeah, I'm
yeah,
thinking
finding
of it.
alternatives maybe that are training the same muscle group, something that's a little bit more comfortable around that injury, can be just as effective. So I usually like to do that. But I'm with you as far as a lot of people don't know how close to failure they are. And usually that usually just takes maybe training with someone who's a little bit more advanced than you. And you're like, oh my gosh, I do have a lot more in the tank, or I was nowhere near failure. You really realize what you're capable of when you have someone pushing you. So it is awesome to have that from time to time.
Yeah, and totally. And when it comes to the rep ranges, I think, again, like going back to the point of novice versus a little bit more advanced. So I think when we're talking about novice lifters, literally any range, I mean, the re research is pretty clear that literally any range, they're probably going to see some progress. I think as we get further down the road, it is important to ask yourself, what is your primary goal? If someone has a primary goal of more strength, then okay, let's maybe stay more in the lower rep ranges, one
Of
to
course.
or whatever. And if someone is like super physique focused and they need to make sure that they're recovering as best as possible, then we maybe don't want to push the nervous system as much or so and stay in the higher rep range.
100%. And just being smart with your training structuring. And so a lot of times that comes from, typically you need an outside source, someone looking at your frame, your body, and saying, okay, what areas do we need to bring up? And what areas are maybe your strengths, and then designing your training protocol around that. And so, and I know that doing that on our own can be difficult, just because we look in the mirror and usually we're pretty hard on ourselves as far as, and when you get an outside source and maybe a little bit more of a accurate view of your physique, in regards to comparing that to your specific goals. So maybe come in, they're like, oh wow, you're very this person's coming in and they're very chest dominant and their shoulders are lacking. So maybe we need to increase frequency in regards to improving shoulder development, and maybe just maintaining the or obviously still wanting to progress in regards to that that muscle that's a strength of yours, but maybe not spending so much time on it, letting something else
Yeah,
catch up.
exactly. Doing something like a specialization cycle or something like that.
So that qualitative data is very important. As much as we love the quantitative data, the logbook, awesome. But a lot of times it does take actually looking at someone's physique and determining how are we going to structure this training program.
Totally. And yeah, so kind of to round the training aspect off, I don't know about your listeners on your podcast, but certainly many of the listeners here, they will know by now that okay, circuit training like F45, Orange Theory, whatever, is not the best to get to my physique goal. But I feel like nowadays, we hear more and more about like, okay, the benefits of HIIT training or a very, very short sprint training, especially many of the women listening will be kind of in the perimenopause, menopause sort of thing. What's your opinion on like, let's put the blanket cardio out there at all in general?
And so, in regards to, let's just say, HIIT training, if it's a very healthy individual, then I understand that, great. But training in itself, as far as hypertrophy training, can really be looked at as HIIT training. We're going extreme bouts of intensity, followed by resting, and then we do our next set. extreme bouts of intensity, resting. And so at that point, we're already getting a very high cortisol response from that. And so specifically when someone's coming to us, let's say in the perimenopause phase, or someone dealing with whether cortisol-based issues or any sort of stress related issues, then a lot of times that's one of the first things I like to eliminate is HIIT training, just because it's so hard to recover from. And usually I want that recovery to be more geared towards our recovery in regards to strength training, because then at that point we're seeing the physique improve. We're not just getting I don't want the nutrition that we're bringing in to all be trying to recover from the HIIT-based cardio. And so I don't really see a point in that. And so I usually, in most regards, like to do low. I have my clients do more low intensity, steady state, just because at that point I feel like we're getting the best of both worlds. Not only are we getting, we're increasing output, but also we're lowering stress hormones, because walking in itself typically is something that's a little bit more enjoyable. It's a lot less taxing on the body, so it's kind of the best of both worlds there. And so, in regards to weight loss, from what I see, and so we're not having much of an effect, negative impact on hormonal response, but we're also still getting the output that we want in regards to caloric expenditure.
Zach, I'm actually 100% with you on that. I think a lot of my clients, they come to me and they say, "Oh, but Stacey Sims says this and that, and Dr. Gabrielle Lyon says this and that," and throw in what other ever else doctor you want to name. And I think totally. Well, number one, we have to think about, okay, what is the goal that they're advocating for? And they're advocating for longevity. So if we're just talking about, hey, physique related outcomes, that is still a different point. And then number two, they're also talking to someone who is, presumably healthy. If you are already coming to us with the highest cortisol imaginable, and you don't have any muscle mass at the moment, et cetera, then exactly like you're saying, I much prefer we focus on the strength component, on the walking component. And then if you have that dialed in and you're recovering, your hormones are slowly recovering, and you're saying, "Hey, Lisa, I do want to make sure my cardiovascular health is not lagging behind. How can I incorporate that in a smart way?" Then doing like a smart HIIT training, like, some very short sprints on the bike without, not the 200-pound deadlift that you're trying to do while doing some kettlebell swings and whatnot, but in a smart way where we can say, okay, we can do that. This is a little bit of a HIIT finisher if you want to. And make sure you're also challenging your anaerobic system, your ATP
100%.
system, and
Yeah,
so on.
someone who isn't, let's say, as weight, isn't as focused on weight training and maybe physique development, but more longevity, and maybe is under time constraints. Yes, I see a place for that, just because they're not getting, they're not doubling up on that HIIT style training, because they're not getting that same, they're not doing the hypertrophy training on top of that. So there is a time and a place. And so I'm not anti-HIIT training, but I'm talking as far as a generalized approach in regards to people who are focused more on physique development
Yeah.
or health optimization in regards to dealing with any sort of illness or ailment that they're currently dealing with.
Yeah, and hormonal issues. I mean, to your area of expertise, I think, that's still like, and if people say like, "Oh, but the research for on HIIT training for hormonal health is also there." Well, I would like to argue that building more muscle mass and assisting
100%.
growth
I think
hormone
that'd be nice. I think that
suffering.
would improve it quicker. Yes. Of
Absolutely. So yeah, Zach, thank you so much for your time. This has been a pleasure
course.
speaking with you. I will make sure to put all your handles in the show notes. I really, really appreciate you taking the time to come and speak with me today.
Yeah, of course. It's been a pleasure. If anyone wants to listen to me and William, have a good time as well and chat. I know we're going to have Lisa on soon. It's Hey Coach Radio is our podcast. And then you can look us up at theeducateddieter.com. But Lisa, it's been such a pleasure. Love your content.
Thank you so
If
much.
you need anything, reach out to me.
Thank you. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Zach. Thank you so much for tuning in. Go and give us both a follow on Instagram or YouTube. One more thing before you go, if you are looking for premium supplements, our partner Fat Muscle Project has got you covered. Head to their website for the best protein powders, creatine, vitamin D, and more, and feel free to use our code NCL at the checkout. Thank you for listening, and don't forget, life is too short to be in a body you don't feel good in.